It's time for the Cheap and Chad's Power Half Hour.
Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back to the best and only podcast that features our league of record. Chief, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, Chaz. How are you?
I'm doing good. And guess what, ladies and gentlemen? We have a special guest. Drum roll. It's my wife.
Yay!
And guess what? She's pregnant again.
No, no, God, no, she's no, not. No, dear God, no.
Apparently we do.
Congratulations,
oh, no. I don't know that our marriage could survive that.
Yeah, it'd be a challenge right now.
Just kidding, everybody. I think they're not actually having another kid. That's just me messing with you.
I know something I don't.
I know, master of women's.
Well, perhaps our esteemed doctors do. You never know.
It's a little scary because Nate just turned 8 months old, and I think we got pregnant with Nate when Cam was like 9 to 10 months old. So we're gonna try to avoid a repeat of that situation.
Yes, we've learned our lesson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, there's all of these like fallacies. Like one of the things they tell you is that when a woman is breastfeeding, she doesn't ovulate, and that's a lie.
Well, it's not a lie. It's like, breastfeeding is like pretty good birth control for like the first 6 months, but then after that, it's like, yeah, your cycle could return at any time.
If I remember correctly, I even remember like one of the times I was like, shouldn't we be using protection? You're like, no, it's fine. And look what happened.
Well. I'm learning a lot of things.
Yeah, I know. Are we on Chad with Chaz or are we on Chief and Chaz?
No, sorry. Yeah. It's a combo. It's a 2-for-1. All right, so we're gonna try and keep it tight tonight.
No more babies.
No more babies. We're trying to keep ourselves to our 30-minute timeline. You know, it is the Chief and Chaz Power Half Hour, and very often we go more than half an hour.
Yeah, but I think the league loves the content, so it's okay.
That's fair.
Yeah, all a fan.
If they have an extra 5 minutes, that just means more listening for everybody in the shower. That's all.
Hey, man, I have one of those like things that you stick in on the shower tile on the wall, and I can Bluetooth my phone to it, and I can play Bluetooth. So,
well, I mean, I just bring in my Bluetooth speaker into the bathroom, and I'm good to go. You guys have your fancy contraptions over there.
Well, like Charlie and I, we just bring our phones into the shower.
Oh yeah, we're pretty bad at that. Yeah,
that is something. Even I, who am pretty much glued to my phone for mostly work purposes, that's something that even I do not do. I do not bring my phone into the shower.
Well, your phone can withstand it. I promise. It can't.
Yeah, it's IP67 if it's an iPhone, so it can. What's worse is that, you know, we have those like ledges, those like square and rectangle cutouts in our shower to allow, you know, like you put shampoo bottles in up, but it's like,
right,
it's the perfect height for your head. So you just toss your phone horizontally and put it, and there's like a little ledge that it can sit in, and so you can just watch videos. So that's really what's happening. Kat has walked in on me, and I've walked in on her, and we're just standing there letting the water flow over us.
Time length has severely increased.
Yeah.
You millennials and your gizmos and gadgets, I'll tell you.
Yeah. You know, there's been a couple times where like I've gone almost an entire shower, and you know, I've got my phone out, and I realize like as I'm getting out of the shower, my right hand like never got wet. Because my whole right forearm and hand never got wet because I keep it out of the water.
Stinky right hand.
Because as soon as water gets on the screen, it becomes hard to swipe.
Yeah, I know. Type. Yeah, you don't want to get the phone.
Hence the Chaz typo when I'm in the shower.
Well, now we know.
Yeah. All right. So let's get to it. So we got a couple topics tonight. First topic, general. We're going to talk about each of our own personal general draft strategies when we've approached previous drafts. So, you know, we wanted to do this topic not only because it gives some insight to the rest of the league, how we think, but also it shouldn't necessarily affect our strategy for this year, although, you know, you might give it away, but it doesn't matter because when you're in the heat of it, most people don't remember individual people's drafts specific strategies.
Yeah, I know when I'm drafting, I am not thinking about other people's draft strategies.
Correct.
Just focused on my own.
Yep, exactly. All right, so I'll kick it off. I mean, obviously, everyone knows my draft strategy last year. I think it's pretty obvious my strategies from previous years. I would always focus on three quality wide receivers. I never really spent big on running back. I never thought it was worth it. Last year, you know, I completely flipped the book and went the other direction. But I'm now of the mind that I need a back that I believe, and I said this last year and I still believe it. I need a back that I believe will be a top 12 back, maybe top six even, if I'm going to win. So there's a high probability that I'm going to bid on at least a couple guys that I believe are going to be, you know, a running back one, because I need at least one of those on my team this year. But that's been my general draft strategy, has been always to spend less on running backs and almost to a degree go like zero RB. I mean, you know, there were years where I picked up like Reggie Bush, Darren Sproles for super, super cheap, guys that were like budget guys I knew would catch passes, that they would have a decent floor because of the pass catching. So I didn't necessarily need it. Another mistake I made in the past was I would really only take three viable running backs, and that ended up biting me in the butt as the season wore on. So as the seasons have progressed, I've increased my number of backs that I'm willing to start to like four or five backs that I have to just roster because of attrition over the course of the year, because of trades that I can package and try and grab somebody better as the season progressing. So that's really been the general strategy I've taken. I've always punted, usually on quarterback. I'm a big fan of streaming quarterback. I'm a big fan of streaming tight end and defense. If you go back through my transactions over the past years, those three positions are probably the ones that I move around the most, which is probably true for most people, but I feel like I've done it more than most in previous years. Last year and the year before, I think I tried to stick with one or two teams, but for the most part, I was always streaming those positions.
Kat, you go first.
Oh, okay. So I've always been a fan of kind of well-rounded starting players. I don't like to cheap out on anyone. I like to spend quality dollars on quality players. I usually invested heavily in quarterback and wide receiver, but I do believe that you can't win it. I've come around to the fact that, well, what I think is a fact, that you can't win a title without a top-tier running back.
Yep.
So last year I tried to do that with... No, 2 years ago. Sorry, 2 years ago I started that with...
2 years ago, right?
No. I got Gurley David Johnson. Year. Yes, David Johnson.
Oh, right.
3 years ago I had Gurley, but that was his sophomore season.
That was his slump.
Yes.
That was a Jeff Fisher season. Yep.
I had Gurley and Hopkins that year, and then the next year they both totally went off. But, David Johnson. That was the first year I went big on running back, and that failed epically when he got injured the first game of the season. I mean, that tanked a lot of people's fantasy seasons.
Yeah.
Not just me. That was bad luck. But, you know, when you encounter these situations often, it feels like more than luck, bad luck, you know. It feels like maybe you don't really know fantasy football as well as you thought you did.
Do you feel like a failure in some instances?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Right? I mean, I'm sure everyone's kind of felt like that at some point, you know, but especially when you care so much about this league and like if you're at the bottom of the barrel, it feels pretty
horrible. Yeah, it's so hard.
Yeah.
As I experienced really for the first time last year, just completely whiffing on a number one running back who just submarined my season, you know, because he was injured the whole time.
Yep.
It really, you know, and I think I actually drafted the rest of my roster pretty well. I had a lot of depth on my team last year, at least in the beginning part of the season. But even despite drafting really well in the later parts of the draft and getting guys like Robert Woods and picking up George Kittle off of waivers before the season began, you know, I still couldn't overcome having an injured number one running back on my team, you know. And I went 6-7. If Leonard Fournette plays two more games, that could be 8-5, you know, that's the margin between winning and losing. So as I've been prepping, you know, the last few days here, you know, I think, you know, you're probably going to see me go after a number one running back and not just punt on on that and just try to play zero RB. But the thing is which guy am I going to go after? And probably more so than recent years. I've become very particular as to which guy I'm going to get. Whether it's looking at their injury history or looking at, you know, just how they're going to be using the offense, how the offense is going to be this year. So I think that's maybe a difference that I'm going to have going into this year. And I had it going into 2017 as opposed to last year where I kind of abandoned that and I was just fine with whatever top running back I ended up with. So I've got a specific person or two in mind at the top, and then the other guys I'm just going to let go.
Yeah, you almost have to. I mean, you know, on the one hand, you have to bid on players, right? Because you want to keep everyone honest. I mean, generally the rule I go by is that I will, at the very least, I'll bid on players at least 60% of their value up to that point. And then after that, I'll start to get a little careful because it's like, you never know, like it's that game of chicken, right? With the way the game works. And also I've noticed that, you know, because Kat and I tend to draft in the same room, right? Like that countdown, like that three,
actually,
two.
We don't tend to draft.
We have on occasion.
Year, I think we did.
Last year we did. But when you have like that 3-2-1 going on, it's not synced between our two computers. So like one of them is happening.
Can be very distracting.
Yeah. Well, yes, but also that because everyone, I think like, you know, we're talking milliseconds here, right? But the difference between when my draft hit zero and your draft hit zero. So like everyone's waiting for like that last like one or two bids to keep somebody honest, to keep it going. There always ends up being like one or two players that goes for a few dollars below where they should go because nobody else bid because everyone assumed everyone else was going to keep bidding or, you know, up it a little bit more.
That's interesting. I never really thought of that, but you're right. When you think back to some players, it's like, is anybody else going to bid this up? Or is this guy really going to go for $30 as opposed to $35 or $40?
Yeah. And then, right.
That does happen.
And then the opposite happens where a guy that you think is going to go for like $35 where you haven't pegged, and then the bid's at $28, and then everyone throws a bid in and it goes from $28 to $35 in half a second.
Because everyone throws a dollar bid in it, but it
stacks the system. So, this is one of those intricacies that having a live draft would stop from happening.
Very good point, Chaz. Very good point. I like your line of thinking here.
Hashtag quality content.
How a live draft could mitigate some of these problems that people might have. Just another reason for the league to have a live draft next year. That's all.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's opposed to that.
Yeah. All right.
At least they shouldn't be.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to the second topic. Unless, Kat, you have another thought?
No, I mean, I've never had depth on my team. And
studs and duds?
Well, the one year I thought I had a good draft, Hino hexed me. That was the David Johnson year.
That was a David Johnson year. And just think, Kat, if that had gone differently, my strategy going into that draft was to grab whichever one of Le'Veon Bell or David Johnson was nominated first. And it just so happened to be Bell. And if it was Johnson, I would have been the one with the guy with the broken hand. So,
which is such a weird injury, right? Like he injures his hand and then doesn't play the rest of the year.
I mean, he could have come back at the end, but there was no point.
Yeah, there's no point. But it's just like that's just a fluke injury, you know. And the weird thing about Johnson is that, you know, he's only really had one phenomenal year. Last year he's looked down on, but he was running back 9 in most formats. Yeah. He was fine. He wasn't up to the par of what you spent on him. I don't know if people realize how old David Johnson is because he came into this league extremely late. He either is 28 or will turn 28 during the season. So that's old for a back. I mean, Le'Veon Bell is going to be 29. Le'Veon Bell has like 3 more years because he came into the league so early. So, you know, with some of these players, you start getting into this realm of, and by the way, Mark Ingram and David Johnson, same age. Right, but people have David Johnson so much higher in their mind.
Yeah, Mark Ingram's been around forever.
And he's been around forever. So it's one of these things where you have these players that they're older, but they don't have the playing time. But it's like, what do you look towards? Because generally speaking, when a running back hits 30, that's the wall. There is proof also in the number of carries. Once they hit, I think it's It's 3,000 or 3,500 carries. I may have mentioned this last season, that once they hit that plateau, their numbers start to drop dramatically. And the big one I pointed to was LeSean McCoy. And obviously that's happened, right? So David Johnson is nowhere near that. McCoy? Oh, yeah, you had McCoy last year. You know, but Johnson's nowhere near that. And, you know, for every one of those, you also have an exception, right? AP, who is just like this god still sculpted. I think he's like 34, 35. He's like, he's going to be Frank Gore, but like better than Frank Gore in old age. He's going to be capable. He's going to always start really strong and then just fade over the course of the season. But the player age should be a bigger factor than people realize, but they don't, because we tend to be a one-off league, right? Where if you're a dynasty league, you tend to be focusing on age and stuff like that more.
Right, right. For this year, I don't think age is a concern for David Johnson. But, you know, we're a redraft league, so it doesn't really matter
to
us right now.
Offense is, though, because, you know, they've been looking horrible in preseason. We have no idea what they're actually going to be.
We do not, no.
Yeah. All right, second topic. Craziest draft moment.
Is this just another topic to get us to talk about your draft strategy?
No,
I don't think anything that is going to come close to what you did last year. So we should probably enter this with the caveat of aside from what I did last year. Yes. Craziest draft
moment you've had. Whether it could be a player that you got that you weren't expecting to get. It could be a player that you got for cheaper, or a player that went for way more than you expected, you know, anything in that realm. So, Kat, you have any thoughts? You want to throw it to Hino or me?
I mean, my first thought, of course, was last year, with your draft, Charlie. But I think if we put that aside, I also think about my draft last year and how I ended up with Antonio Brown and OBJ. That was not the plan.
That's
at
true.
All.
Yeah, yeah. You did not mean that to happen.
And I really, really wanted McCaffrey. But he went for $52, which I was like, of course, in the end, that was totally worth it.
Bargain.
Yeah. Yep. But at the time, I was like, that's insane. Mm-hmm. You know, but watching Gurley and go for $64 and Kamara go for $64, you know, I was just. I think I was burned by the David Johnson thing the year before and like just didn't want one of the absolute
gun shy.
Yeah, top tier guys. So I was like, okay, middle ground, you hear Christian McCaffrey, he's my guy. But I think a couple people had that plan. And mm-hmm. This is not coming across well on a podcast.
It's fine.
I tell Charlie, I'm not great on the spot. And I need
That's
time
okay.
To, like,
it's okay. We like hearing your voice.
But when we were all that first auction year draft, when we were all at Gates and it was Johnny's place, but Gates was there.
That was the first year.
That was the first year of the auction league, I think.
I thought that was the second or third year.
It was probably the second year. Second year. First year,
because that was the year we did really well, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Because we got Reggie Bush for $100.
So it was the second year. But that was really fun. Were you there, Hino?
I believe I was there. Yeah.
I think you were too. I just remember. Yeah. Tim, Joe, and Claire being.
Other
room.
Room,
yeah, and like hearing them yell, that was so great.
Yeah, there was a lot of tension in that room.
Yeah, and even you and I, we were in that room, but we were co-owning, but we were in the same room as everyone else, so I couldn't like we couldn't have
yeah,
open
you were,
conversations.
You were like tapping me,
yes,
to indicate
like,
stuff.
Like, bid, yeah. You know.
And I was one with the controller, and we ended up.
We had Tom Brady.
We ended up
and
with Tom Brady
Phil
with
Rivers,
Phil Rivers,
and now, to Tom Brady.
But that was an accident, right? Because remember, we wanted Phil Rivers, but we got Tom Brady by accident because we were bidding somebody up.
Yeah,
and we ended up with them because we got caught with them.
We traded Tom Brady to Johnny
for Brandon Lloyd, I think. Who I don't remember.
Possibly,
if he did
but that was a bad trade.
Yes, it
I
was.
Mean,
we should have kept Tom Brady.
We ended up coming in second that year to Gelch.
Yeah,
it's like the bane of.
That's the closest we've ever come.
Charlie's fantasy.
Well, that was the asterisk year, correct?
Yeah,
that
yes, is it was
huge
yes.
Asterisk.
Yeah,
that was
yeah.
The asterisk year. Yeah, I feel
so,
like we had a good chance
of
winning
the
league that year, but yeah, closest we've ever come, and it was together. So, our solo journeys have not been
no, they're not
so successful.
I really want to win.
I know we both really want to. Everyone really wants to win. No one likes losing.
Well, I want to get rid of the toilet trophy.
I don't know what happened for you guys. if, you know, one of you does win, how is the other going to feel about that?
I'd be really happy if Kat won. As long as I wasn't, like, the worst in the league, I'd be really happy for Kat.
I'd be really happy if I
won,
too.
What if you face each other in the finals, though?
That'd be a perfect scenario, because either way, the trophy's coming back to our house.
No, okay. I want him to lose.
Sure. Okay, I get that. Obviously, I want to win, but if it comes down to me and her, like, I'm going to be, like, 100% happy for me, and I'm going to be, like, 93% happy for Kat. So either way, it's a win-win, and the trophy comes home where it's supposed to be.
Yeah, and we get rid of the toilet bowl.
And we get rid of the toilet trophy. I don't know if people remember that. There is a toilet trophy.
It's been in our house for
almost 2 years. It's in our master bathroom. It looks at me when I shower.
Well, luckily, you're not looking back at it. You're looking at yourself.
Exactly.
That is true. What about you, Hino?
For me, you know, I was while you guys were talking, I was trying to think back through some of the drafts. I remember being really mad in 2013 when everybody let Joe Mancuso draft clearly the best team in the league, and that was the one year where the Hino Hex actually correctly predicted the league winner. I don't know that was necessarily shocking or anything, but I just remember screaming into the void while you guys were back at ND and I was drafting in Chicago. Nothing really too shocking off the top of my head, aside from, I mean, Chaz just raised the bar for shocking things that happened in the draft. I remember the one year where he took, like, the three number one receivers.
Yeah, it was a Green, you
know,
and
was a
Green, Brown, and somebody, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe Mike Evans was in there too.
That sounds right. And then the first game they went off, and I was like, "Book my ticket to the playoffs." Right. And I think I only got to the first round of playoffs, I think.
Yeah, I think you did make the playoffs.
Yeah, and then, you know, obviously you did what you did last year. So I guess last year, just in general, you know, and you had something to do with that, but just finally, it seemed like people were finally willing to come around to the idea of, oh, I should spend money on top players.
Mm-hmm.
It's like after 8 years of being a little on the conservative side, people are like, yep, let's open up the bankroll here. And who cares if one guy costs me $55 or $60? I'm going for it. So I liked that last year.
You know, there's a parity that comes with this, right? Because that strategy is studs and duds, right? You spend the significant portion of your budget on high-end players, and then you fill out the rest with low-end. Doing that, having more teams doing that, which I honestly believe as we move on, that'll be the strategy more people take. But the what's odd about that is that actually brings us, in terms of parity, more in line with the draft values you see assigned, where you have all these players that are like $1 and like the pre-done format where it says like, here all the players are like $1 and so on. And you look at that and you go, there's no way that happens in our league. But the more players that get bid on higher up, and the more money that's spent, the more likely that is to come true.
No, that's true, Chaz, because I found last year it was easier to land the low level guys I was targeting, like, than it was in previous years. Like, mm-hmm. I think of like Robert Woods last year, and getting him for like $8 or $9. I went into the draft expecting to spend like up to $15 on Robert Woods, because I thought he fit like the prototypical low level receiver who's going to get nominated late in the draft, but people have money, so they're going to bid him up past his value. But Gates, like you said, because of people spending money earlier in the draft, those kind of guys did not get bid up last year. Mm-hmm. And so maybe we are trending in that direction, perhaps. I hesitate to say for sure, but I think that could be possible and something that, you know, might be maybe trends into this year as well, where those those kind of mid-ish level, low-level guys, sleeper-ish types, don't get bid up nearly as much as they might have in other years.
Sounds like you need more data to identify patterns, so I guess we're just going to have another draft.
Yep.
Exactly, I would agree with that. Yes.
Speaking of it, so we're 1 week and 3 days away from the draft.
That is correct.
Tell your friends.
Mm-hmm.
What is one thing that we would each change about the league? It can be settings, it can be number of teams, it can be settings, it can be number of teams,
Cattle,
it can be owners and divisions. First. Speaking of Rachel, if you're listening to this, can you please vote so we can come to a decision?
Yeah. You guys go first, because I'm still thinking about my answer to this.
For me, it's going to be, I believe that a setting change, switching to full point PPR, makes the most sense. In terms of a change. I'm also a big fan of moving quarterbacks to 6 points, but the reason why I prefer full PPR versus half PPR is mainly because it fundamentally changes the way we evaluate players. If you were to switch quarterbacks point scores from 4 points for touchdown to 6 points, it generally, you know, it levels the playing field for everybody. It's a rising tide for every quarterback, right? Because every quarterback's going to make more. But in a PPR league, all of a sudden, it changes the way we look at running backs. It makes that zero running back strategy more viable, right? Because all of a sudden, you know, a guy who catches 70 balls, right? Last year, Jalen Richard for the Raiders was a worthless pick. But all of a sudden, PPR, he caught 72 balls, something like that. So all of a sudden, he's now like borderline RB2. He's startable in every format. So I think a switch to full point PPR not only it widens the pool of candidates to actually go after and makes them worth it, it makes the studs even more valuable, and therefore you want to spend more, right? Like guys like Hopkins, who are going to catch 150 balls, all of a sudden, you know, they're scoring, you know, their floor is like 25 points a game and their ceiling is like 45, 50 points a game. But it also creates a larger stratification between the different tiers. So a good example of this is a guy like T.Y. Hilton, who in most formats, in half point PPR format, he's like a tier 3 wide receiver, right? Somewhere, you know, because he catches balls for a ton of yards, and he usually does pretty well in touchdowns, but he doesn't catch a ton of balls, right? He's usually like 60 catches for like 1,100 yards and like 8 touchdowns. That's a pretty typical stat line for T.Y. Hilton, maybe give or take a couple on the touchdowns. If you all of a sudden make it PPR, now you have a whole bunch of other people that are going to pass him, where even though he's producing, the PPR aspect is going to bump a bunch of people up, and it's going to make more people more valuable, and he drops down. So you have all these wide receivers that are looked at as like top flight guys that they start dropping on the list a little bit. So for me, that would be the change that I would want to see implemented. Again, I realize that a change like that completely fundamentally shifts our entire stat tracking that Mancuso does. So, you know, it's almost like starting the league over in a sense, because everything we have before isn't usable in terms of like data for analysis and how, you know, records that are being kept and all that kind of stuff. So I understand that to a degree. I want to keep that. But at the same time, I feel like a change to full point PPR is inevitable. It's the way that things should be. At least in my opinion.
Cap? What do you got?
Yeah, I'm with Charlie on like the 6 point touchdowns, quarterback touchdowns, but that's mostly because I tend to spend money on quarterbacks, so I want it to be worth more.
Yep.
When I do spend money. But I'm easily convinced that we should just keep it as it is. I think one of the biggest things I would change, and I don't have like a definitive solution yet, but is the payout system, and maybe even up the buy-in for the league.
Change it because you want more people to get.
Well, I just think that like the regular season wizard winner doesn't necessarily get enough. I think that because I think it's a more impressive feat in a lot of ways. It's not more impressive because your name doesn't end up on a trophy, but to be the regular season winner is a big deal. Like, it's pretty. Charlie's giving me a face, so sorry. I can't see that on the podcast.
Yeah, I used to hold that position, Kat, but then I'm like, who really cares?
I know, you don't remember.
Season winner.
I know,
like,
I know.
They're awarded something. I mean, it's not like you're given nothing.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You get something.
It's probably like the Yankees fan in me, just, you know, being like, yeah, we were the best record in baseball, but we didn't win the World Series. But hey.
I think they're awarded accordingly. I think it's just fine. Like,
what are the 2007 Patriots most well known for?
Winning the Super
not winning Super Bowl. Okay. They went 16-0 in the regular season.
Oh, that's right.
Remember? And they lost. That's what they're known for, not having an undefeated season. So I feel like regular season winner, if you're not the eventual league winner, it's a cool, but it's like, you know, it's second fiddle, obviously. That's a
not even second fiddle, because you may not even make the finals. So
that's true.
But you know, I would still probably like do a little bit of restructuring of the payout system, but I haven't really looked into it yet.
Well, how about this?
Oh, you know what I would change? I would change that Gelch still sends me paper checks. So I would change it so that Gelch gets Venmo.
Electronic
and
only.
The rest of us in the 21st century, second decade. And so he can just send me money that way.
Oh, instead of like 2 months later?
Yeah. Or like, you know, he gives you cash at the bachelor party that didn't happen this year. You know, it's just hard to track.
Yeah, that's fair. What was I just going to say? Oh, so payout. Here's an idea. We do this in one of my dynasty leagues. So part of the pot is segmented for, there's two ideas here. I'm going to, idea A, idea B. Idea B. Idea one, A. you take part of the pot.
Wait, what's idea A?
It's okay. It's idea one and idea A. There we go. Idea one is you could potentially increase the pot or the buy-in, but you take part of the pot, and every week there's a payout, a small payout to somebody randomly for a specific category. So, for example, in week one, whatever quarterback throws the most yards, or in week two, whatever tight end has the most receptions. So it's like a weekly payout for something. It's randomized before the start of the season, but it's potential to win a little bit extra cash each and every week for a particular category. That's one idea. The other idea, and this is more popular in dynasty formats, but it's called an Empire League, where half the buy-in...
I've heard of this.
Yeah, half the buy-in is set aside every year, and it accumulates year over year, and it's only paid out when someone wins the year, someone wins the league 2 years in a row. So it's the reason why it's used in Dynasty is because it incentivizes like good team building and not selling out your entire team for one season to win the league 1 year, right? Because eventually, you know, you go 5, 6, 7 years, that pot is going to be a few thousand dollars for the Empire part of it. But it could just as well work in a redraft league like ours, where part of our thing, and you could do it smaller, right? You could do 10 of our $50 buy-in, whatever it is, set it aside for the Empire. And so someone has to win the league 2 years in a row. And if they do that, they get the extra pot money.
Forgive me, but has that happened? Has someone won 2 years in a row?
Gelch did in the first 2 years. Well, I mean, asterisk,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But yes, that did happen.
Okay.
But no, we other than that, we have not had any repeat winners.
I mean, think about how long we expect this league to keep going, right? Because we all intend to keep playing, right? This is going to be a league that should be in existence for another 30 years. Assuming the NFL is still in existence in 30 years. you know, our kids could be playing it. And, you know, you could have a pot that's a few thousand dollars that could end up being a huge thing to win. And it'd be a huge bragging rights.
With inflation, it might not be that much.
That's fair.
Won't even pay for, like, a textbook.
But that could be a fun way to, you know, because then all of a sudden, you know, that second year, right? So last year, Mancuso won? Hino won.
No,
Mancuso won. This year, no one's going to trade with him. People are going to, if they see he's betting on a player, they're going to bet on it. It's going to make, you know, it's going to make it more difficult for that one person for the year, but that's kind of the fun of it too.
Charlie's trying to sabotage the season.
I'm not trying to sabotage Joe's season, but, you know, I think, you know, it would start with this season.
I did not think about bidding up Hino because he was the champion last year's draft. I did not think about it at all.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, not letting him get a player he clearly wanted never crossed my mind.
Right, right. And that would add a certain dimension to it.
I mean,
yeah. And if we were going to institute it, it wouldn't be till next year. So, I mean, you'd have to win this year and next year to qualify, right? So it would start next year, but the money would go this year and next year if we were going to do something like that.
Yeah, I've heard of that. It's not a bad idea.
Spice it up.
You know, to respond to your PPR proposal. I hear you, Chaz, but do we really want the Jalen Richards of the world to have that much fantasy value? Do we really want those kind of guys swinging whether or not you potentially win a week because you have like a backup running back
who
catches six balls a game.
There's two sides of the argument, right? One side is that people who are rewarded for better draft evaluation, for more research, right? Finding those low hanging fruits of people like, those theoretics of the world, that grabbing those guys and knowing who they are, you get rewarded because they can help you out. But the other side of the coin is that, you know, all of a sudden the waiver wire becomes more useful, but like there's more to choose from in the waiver wire because you have more options of people that can score points for you. So there's two sides of it. It's just, you know, to me, obviously PPR has higher scoring. It's about making, you know, the high guys higher and the low guys lower. That same thing that makes sense in my head when I said it. So
I don't know. I find half point is the right mix. Like I think in my PPR draft, like, yeah, I know that I'm going to be the one league that I do that's PPR. I know the guys who are PPR monsters. It's not that hard to figure out who thrives in PPR leagues and who doesn't. I think it makes drafting almost too easy in a way because it does increase, especially when you can pick up the Jalen Richards of the world and be fine at number two running back. You know, like, I don't know. It's fine, and I like PPR more than I like standard without any kind of point per reception metric. But I like the half point. I think it hits the right mix. So, my suggestion was going to be, that I feel like within the near future, I think we gotta do something to pump up the value of quarterbacks. Because I think now we have been trending in a direction where nobody's spending on quarterback now. In the earlier part of this league, people would still spend on quarterback. But now, if a quarterback goes for $20, that's a landmark achievement.
I'm pretty sure I've spent over $40 on Aaron Rodgers multiple times.
You did, yeah. That's what happened in the early league.
This year, there's no way that Mahomes doesn't go for more than $20.
Right, I agree, but he's going to be it's going to be Mahomes and then over $20. Everybody else is probably going to be $10.
It's crazy. If you look at the ESPN valuations, which are terrible, we all know that. Mm-hmm. But it had Mahomes at... Sorry, I'm unlocking my computer
right now so I can pull it up. While she's doing that, let me just say that I understand your point, Hino, and obviously the two easiest ways to change, pump up quarterback scoring is to increase touchdowns, we proposed this a couple of years ago, I think I did, was change the yardage to go from 4 points every 100 yards to 5 points, right? So you get a point per 20 yards. But the one thing I will say is that the reason why it's change fundamentally is two reasons. Number one, there is a wider pool of good candidates to choose from, right? Like back in the day, you basically had like a cream of the crop, like Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, and then everybody else was a lower tier of quarterback. We've had more good quarterbacks come in the league and because we've changed to a passing league, you have more people scoring more points, throwing more touchdowns, throwing more air yards. So therefore, there's more options. That's number one. And number two, the other reason is because we've had more quarterbacks who run and can score with their legs coming to the league, right? So your Cam Newtons, even a guy like Baker Mayfield, who's not a traditional running quarterback, can still move. So those two things have artificially inflated the ability of a quarterback to score. And therefore, because of one of those two things, or both in some cases, there's a wider pool to choose from. So therefore, why spend that money? That's one of the reasons why I've always been a big quarterback streamer.
Yeah, I get that. So if you really wanted to pop up the value of quarterbacks, then you make it a super flex.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
That's the way to do it.
Yep, that's fair.
That would be the way, because then in a 12-team league with only 32 starting quarterbacks, everybody's going to have a bye week.
I mean,
the price of quarterbacks is going to Right, potentially you would need three quarterbacks, or you just say screw it for one of your weeks and you go without a quarterback.
Yep.
Or you go with only yep. one quarterback. So, you know, I've proposed it before. I've thrown it out there. It doesn't get a lot of traction because I people are afraid just the numbers game of it all, and only having, you know, 24 or having 24 only, you know, quarterbacks, or 32 quarterbacks, you know, in the bye week situations that makes. So I get it from a numbers perspective, but I don't know. I feel like, and maybe we need to go through a few more drafts just to solidify this, but I feel like if we keep heading this direction with quarterbacks, then I feel like maybe in a few years we might need to do something to shake up that position, at least in the draft, and make the draft maybe a little more unpredictable from right. that perspective.
Yeah. Kat, did you pull up the stats you were looking for?
Yeah, so ESPN has Mahomes at $18, and then Deshaun Watson, Aaron Rodgers, Andrew Luck, and Matt Ryan at $6, and then pretty much everyone else at $1 or $0, which is weird. Because
okay, so though, so a handful of players are a third of the price of Mahomes.
Yeah, so basically they're saying Mahomes and then Deshaun, Aaron, Matt Ryan, and Baker are the next tier, and then everyone else is just, it might as well stream.
Now here's the thing, yeah. right? Last year, Mahomes scored on average like 8 to 10 points more yeah. than the second best quarterback. So is he, in my opinion, he's worth that, you know, last year, obviously,
this
you got
is his sophomore season.
His sophomore season, true. But I'm saying if he's going to, and I think everyone expects him to have a, right, because he threw for 50 touchdowns, it's going to be very hard to duplicate that. But even with a small regression, you know, paying that $18 to $25, if he's going to have that level of play and still net you an extra 8 to 10 points.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's still a no brainer because you're quarterback and tight end are the two positions where having like the best player is a huge advantage over everybody else positionally, right? Last year, if you had Kittle, if you had Ertz, if you had Kelsey, you had a, and in previous years it was Gronk, right? Or in previous years it was Jimmy Graham until he disappeared off the face of the earth when he got traded to the Seahawks. But that was a huge, that positional value was huge because there are so few of them.
Yeah, yes and no. You know, I don't know that. I mean, obviously, Joe won the title last year with Kelsey on his team.
Yeah.
I owned Ertz and Kittle at the same time for a brief time last year. Yeah, that was great and all, but I won the league in 2017 by streaming tight ends. You know, I didn't necessarily need to have a top flight tight end to round out my roster. In 2017,
yeah.
It was Brady.
I thought so.
And
yeah.
he didn't have a great year. He had a good year,
yeah.
but he didn't have a great year, especially in the playoffs. He did not have a great playoffs for me. But
well, fortunately, you played me.
was that the, no, I don't think I played you in 2017.
No, it was not 2017.
That was, I played Chaz and Jake and then Joe. 2016,
yeah.
yes.
Yeah, Charlie and I have never made the playoffs at the same time.
Yeah. But I wonder what a draft would look like if we had a super flex. I don't know that Pat Mahomes necessarily would go for, actually, it would be interesting to see. So Mahomes probably goes for like maybe $30 or something like that. Mm-hmm. But where it really starts to get interesting is when quarterback 15 or 16 starts to come up, and how much are you going to pay for Philip Rivers? Yeah, how much are you going to pay for Matt Ryan? How
Kirk
much
Cousins.
Are you going to pay for Jimmy Garoppolo? Yeah, like how much are those guys going to go for, and how does that affect the rest of your roster construction? So up and down the roster. So I don't know what the ramifications of that would be. Would we have to move away from being three wide receivers and be, you know, two running back, two receivers, super flex, tight end, you know, would we have to do that? I don't know, potentially.
You could do, you would do, I mean, my recommendation would be you do two running back, two wide receivers, flex, running back, wide receiver, tight end, and super flex and then tight end. That'd be the way I would do it. So you basically could just convert that one, the third wide receiver to a super flex.
You just want to do that. You just want to do that so you could draft four top tier running backs. That's all.
Well, you know, here's the funny thing is that in a super flex, you could do that because all of a sudden, all of those top tier running backs are going to drop. They're going to be going in the 40s and 50s. Right, because of allocation, and it's one of those things where like it's a strategy, right? You have some people sit back and go, "I'm just going to punt on quarterback. I'm going to take like two low end guys, and then just spend all my money on my running backs and wide receivers." It's a viable strategy. The thing to remember is that generally speaking, quarterbacks will always score the most points, right? So in terms of the gaps, you know, you're going to get the most bang for your buck spending money on quarterback.
Right, exactly.
If we were to make a change like that, the first year would have to be like almost like a throwaway year because we just...
I mean, it would still go in the trophy.
It would. But at the same time, like, you couldn't draw any conclusions because we wouldn't know what we were doing and we wouldn't know how to value players. And I think more than... I honestly believe at least a handful would go for over $60 just because we weren't...
Running back or quarterbacks?
Players.
Players?
Yes. Not quarterback.
That's true. Yeah, you're right. It would take
a couple years for people to adjust. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I agree.
And again, we're coming back to the same argument of all of the stats.
Are now
like you're it's a whole.
They're just like you're resetting. I mean,
Here's the thing, right? This is year 10. So if we're ever going to make a change, like a fundamental change to the league, next year is the year to do that because you have your first 10 years of the league. Yeah. We evolve. Next 10 years of the league. You know, if so, it needs to be a heavy debate for next season.
I think it's something we should keep talking about. You know, after the season, and I don't think there's any harm in saying what do we think of, because we have kept essentially the same format and roster construction the entire 10 years that we've had this league. So. You know, as football changes, I think it's only natural to ask, you know, should we be changing how we operate the league as well?
100% agree.
Mm-hmm. As they get new helmets, we get new helmets.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. What else we got, Chaz?
I mean, that was my last topic, and we're now past the 30, the half hour mark. So I feel good calling it there, and you know, this is a good roundtable discussion. Obviously, in our lead up to the draft, we're going to have a pre-draft episode. We are planning on having a post-draft
quorum.
That's a good way to say it. If you're interested, that'll be open for anybody. So if you're interested in having a conversation, anyone who's a member of the league, yeah. If you listen to this and you're not a member of our league, props to you. I'm sure this is great theater. We want to know who you are. Please write us at chiefandchaz.com. No. We don't have a website. Please don't do that. But you can submit questions on Anchor if you want to. Anchor.fm, Chief of Jazz Power Half Hour. But yeah, we're going to have a quorum. So if you want to participate, please let us know. There'll be a conference line that'll go out. All you have to do is dial in. We're probably going to try and keep it to an hour after the draft, directly after the draft, right? So, I mean, it'll be late night for us, but we'll get that recorded. That'll be a good conversation. That'll be fun. Reacting to all the different things that happened, reacting to the new big Chaz strategy that's going to come out. Or lack of thereof.
You said you told us your strategy in the WhatsApp.
I have told everyone what my strategy is at some point in the past. 6 months. I floated out there in various methodologies.
All right, Gelch, go back.
So someone wants to go back and review.
Somebody wants to do that. I ain't going to do it. But
please feel free. But I have basically laid out what my draft strategy is.
Like the first letter of all of your messages for a month spelled it out.
I declined to comment.
It's the first word of every fifth message.
Man, it's a skip code.
That he sent on April 9th.
I'm not that intelligent.
Something stupid like that.
That'd be insane.
Yeah. No comment. All right. So thanks again to our guest, Kat. Thank you to Chief. And we'll see you next time on the Chief and Chaz Power Half Hour. We'll be right back.